What is art without the muse? Many of Western art's most famous works are depictions of women. But who were these women? Do they have their own stories to share with the world? Hello and welcome to Art Muse, a podcast that aims to reshape the ways in which we interpret well-known works of art by paying dues to the women whose images have been immortalized, but whose names and stories have been wrongfully overlooked. While these women's faces are familiar to viewers around the world, their identities have been largely forgotten. Together, we will explore the important lives and legacy of the female muse and appreciate these works of art from a new perspective, through the eyes of the women whose image stares back at us. Is the muse in actuality just as, if not more, important than the artists themselves? And I'm your host, Grace Anna. If you have taken any Art History 101 course, you likely learned that Édouard Manet's Olympia marked the birth of modern art. Manet's rejection of academic convention in both style and subject was revolutionary. Instead of idealized scenes, Manet decided to paint modern life in Paris, making the everyday worthy of art. Grit and all. In conversation with the Renaissance artist Titian's revered work Venus of Urbino, Manet exchanged the mythological Venus for a prostitute, who stares at us unabashedly. Olympia, which caused one of the greatest uproars in the history of art, is now celebrated as the first modernist painting, and Manet is credited with forever changing the course of art. However, it was not just Manet's artistic innovation, but the presence of two identifiable women, one of the streets and one of a newly emerging Black working-class community, that made Olympia one of the most earth-shattering works ever to be created. What you might have not learned in that Art History 101 course is that both women in Manet's Olympia were in fact real women, whose names and stories are only just beginning to gain the recognition they deserve. In today's episode, I share with you the stories of Victorine Meurent and Laure, the two superstars of Manet's Olympia. Victorine is arguably the most famous face of the 19th century, known for her red hair and brazen gaze. Manet painted Victorine more than 9 times, and she can be found in all of Manet's best works, including Le Déjeuner sur l'Herbe. And her career as a model did not stop with Manet. She also modeled for Degas, Toulouse-Lautrec, Thomas Couture, and other prominent artists of Paris's Golden Age. Nicknamed La Cravette for her small size, Victorine left behind a large legacy, modeling for some of the most renowned works of all of art history. But Victorine was not just an artist's model. She was also a musician, playing both the guitar and violin, and an established painter herself, who showed her work at the Salon 6 times. In fact, in 1876, her painting was selected to be included in the Salon when Manet's own submission was not. Unfortunately, history has largely misremembered Victorine, confusing her with the many notorious figures she posed for. There are no records indicating that Victorine herself was ever a prostitute, and her legacy fell victim to the ill-natured rumors and misinformation spread by men of her time and early biographers of Manet. Today, I share Victorine's real story in the rightful way she deserves to be remembered, celebrating her long life and career as model, musician, and painter. I will then share the story of Olympia's maid and confidant, Laure. For much of history, Laure and her important role in Olympia has been largely disregarded. In fact, her name has only recently been identified by scholar Denise Murel, who found her contact in one of Manet's studio notebooks, previously overlooked while hiding in plain sight. Laure can be found in 3 of Manet's works, one of which is a portrait of Lore. These depictions of Lore not only give us a sense of who Lore was, but of the growing Black communities of Paris. Painted just 15 years after territorial slavery was abolished in France, Lore was one of many newly free Blacks who were living and working in northern Paris. In fact, we know Lore's exact address from Manet's notebook, and she lived just a 10-minute walk from Manet's studio, in a neighborhood filled with artists as well as a burgeoning Black population. What largely makes Olympia the first modern painting is that Manet replaced mythology and academic tradition with scenes from modern Paris. And part of this modern reality was this emergence of free Black habitants. It was not just with the presence of a prostitute that Manet expresses modernity, but also with her Black maid. Lore represented a pioneering age of Paris, in which newly freed Black members of society were becoming an integral part of the working class, commanding just as much pictorial space as the figure of Victorine. Lore's appearance in Olympia is equally essential to our understanding of what makes the painting one of the greatest works ever made. So let's dive in. Victorine Louise Meurent was born on February 18, 1844, in Paris. She was baptized the very next day at the Church of St. Elizabeth, the record of which still exists today. Her last name actually means to die in French. Quite an intense name to be born with. Victorine came from a long line of artisans. Her father, Jean-Louis Étienne Meurent, worked as a metal engraver. Her mother, Louise Therese Lemaire Meurent, by some accounts was a millinaire, and by others owned a laundry shop. It seemed that Victorine's artisan roots rubbed off on her, as at an early age she was already aspiring to be an artist. We also know that Victorine played both guitar and violin, which we can assume she was taught in childhood. Victorine was born in the Latin Quarter of Paris, a lower working class neighborhood inhabited largely by laborers and notorious for debauchery. She would have grown up surrounded by some of the most infamous balls of Paris, like Chateau Rouge, and may have even spent time there in her adolescence. These balls were located in dark alleyways, the hidden back streets of the demi-monde of Paris, where all forms of bad behavior were welcome. Some believe that Victorine's early years were spent as a street performer, playing guitar for the night creatures of Paris. While Victorine's beginnings in the Latin Quarter are left to our imagination, we do know that by 1861, at the age of 17, Victorine began modeling for the painter Thomas Couture. How Victorine met Thomas Couture is another mystery. It's possible the two met through the Parisian nightlife, or perhaps through Victorine's father, who would have had some connections with artists due to his trade. But Thomas Couture was more than a painter. He was also a teacher, and at the time was offering drawing classes for women. Might Victorine have been one of his students? Might she have found her way to his studio, not just to model, but to study art? It's very likely that Victorine did take Couture's drawing class, and that this may have not just been Victorine's start to modeling, but of her artistic studies as well. Another one of Couture's students was Édouard Manet. In fact, it was Couture who first instilled in Manet the desire to break from academic painting. Though there are various tales as to how Manet first encountered Victorine, it is most probable that they met through both of their connections with Thomas Couture. Would Manet have known as he caught a glimpse of the young Victorine in his teacher's studio that he had found his greatest artistic collaborator? That they together would not only make his best work, but some of the greatest paintings of all time. Might Victorine have seen in Manet an opportunity to leave the streets of Paris and finally pursue her career as an artist? Victorine first modeled for Manet in 1862 and would be his favorite model for the next 12 years. Manet, who rejected the artificiality of academic modeling, must have been drawn to Victorine's authenticity in both looks and character. But how authentic are Manet's depictions of Victorine? This question is of utmost importance. Because we do not have a ton of surviving information on Victorine, much of her life has been told through the lens of Manet's paintings of her. But how well can we get to know Victorine through these paintings? Can we read them as biographical? Or is Victorine instead playing a part? The answer is likely somewhere in the middle, and in these portraits of Victorine, we see a blending of personality and performance. She is both the subject of the painting and her authentic self. As Victorine posed as a variety of identities, street performer, prostitute, nanny, and aristocrat, she is both the actress performing these roles and Victorine, who herself was able to climb the ladders of social class through her time with Manet. In this way, we see a collaborative exchange between painter and sitter, and the genius of Manet's paintings of Victorine are just as much due to her innovative modeling as to Manet's artistry. It is Victorine who was in charge of her performances in Manet's work, playing with both the spectacle as well as the secret hints of self that she shares with the viewer. The first work that Manet painted of Victorine was a portrait. Made in 1862, when Victorine was just 18 years old, we see before us a young woman, unafraid to stare directly back at the viewer. We also see the beginnings of Victorine's signature look, the black ribbon around her neck, her bright red hair, and her amber eyes that gaze at us with a fierce intensity. She has a serious expression and a slightly reticent air, as if she is just acclimating herself with both painter and viewer. Despite her youth, she seems aged with experience, and in the depths of her eyes, we get a sense of all that Victorine had already endured. And yet, we also see a glitter of hope. In these same eyes that look at us, just as they did at Manet as he painted her first portrait, we see in Victorine her desire to leave behind the rough streets of Paris and embark on a new life journey. As Victorine looks our way, she whispers with her eyes, "This is my beginning." The portrait is at once a realistic rendering of an individual and an expression of the modern Parisian woman. It is our first taste of the interplay between subject and self, in what perhaps is the most straightforward image of Victorine. The portrait was never exhibited in Victorine's lifetime, and it's believed that Manet gave this portrait to Victorine as a gift. Perhaps an act of gratitude that he had found his partner in crime that would help him shake up the art world. Painted in the same year, we see Victorine for the second time in Manet's The Street Singer, depicting a street performer leaving a bar, mouth full of cherries and guitar in hand. As legend goes, Manet spotted a female singer with her guitar exiting a cabaret, and struck by the scene, asked her to model for him. When she declined his request, he knew he could turn to Victorine. The Street Singer is an ideal example of the blending of fact and fiction in Manet's renderings of Victorine. While Victorine is performing the part of a street performer, she is simultaneously posing as herself, as she was also a guitar player that likely performed in cabarets in her early days. Is this Victorine? Is it the performer that caught Manet's eye? Or is it a representation of the female musicians that played their way through the lowest quarters of Paris? The answer is likely all of the above. In perhaps her most overtly performative rendering, we find Victorine center stage in Manet's Mademoiselle V in the costume of an espada, the third work she modeled for that same year. Here we see Victorine posed as a male espada, the man who kills the bull at the end of a Spanish bullfight. Manet, who collected Spanish costumes, fashioned Victorine as a bull slayer. And yet her shoes are not at all what an espada would wear, a detail that reminds us of the portrait's performative nature. The work is theatrical. Manet the director, Victorine the actress, bringing a scene to life before our eyes. The following year would birth the infamous works that sent shockwaves through the Parisian art world. While Manet painted these works, it is the presence of the figures modeled by Victorine that sparked the loudest uproar. Both of these works are now among the most recognizable in the world, and forever changed the course of modern art. The first made was Le Déjeuner sur l'Herbe. The work is exceptionally large, measuring over 6 by 8 feet. It is inarguably Manet's most ambitious work to date, and the work he hoped that would launch his career. Playing off of the Renaissance trope of picturesque pastoral concerts, Manet has instead placed the scene in modern-day Paris, painting recognizable individuals and replacing ethereal goddesses with the non-idealized body of a real Parisian woman. We see Victorine in the nude in the center of the canvas, staring back at us as if we've just intruded upon the scene. Victorine is no doubt the heart and soul of this painting. She is the active force that not only connects the viewer with the canvas, but forces us to participate as voyeur. But why is Victorine nude amongst a group of clothed men? At first glance, Victorine reminds us of an Eve-like figure, a fallen woman in a sea of temptation. And yet, her unbothered gaze tells us that Victorine finds nothing wrong with her own nudity. Victorine was only 18 years old when she modeled for Le Déjeuner sur l'Herbe. It was incredibly brave of her to risk both her personal and artistic reputation by posing in the nude. Her identity would have been recognized by viewers at the time. A real naked woman whose name they knew, staring right back at them. How did it feel to pose in the nude for the first time? What was she thinking about as she sat for Manet? Was her heart racing? Was Victorine nervous or exhilarated? Perhaps the answer is in her bemusing smile, which, like the Mona Lisa smile, carries as many questions as it does answers. The painting was so scandalous that it was rejected by the Salon, instead exhibited at the Salon des Refusés, an alternate exhibition funded by Napoleon III that displayed the rejected works. Even at the Salon des Refusés, it caused such an uproar that more than one visitor started hitting the painting with a stick. Napoleon himself openly condemned the painting, appalled by its indecency. This means that Napoleon would have been familiar with at least the image of Victorine. And despite his dislike, it's pretty remarkable that he would have recognized her face. But this was just the warm-up. Painted in the same year, Victorine and Manet made their most scandalous collaboration yet, Olympia. The painting is a response to Titian's famed Venus of Urbino. But here Manet has exchanged Titian's goddess-like Venus with Victorine, who poses as a prostitute. We see Victorine again, fully nude and full of attitude. Victorine proudly flaunts her body as she stares at us, unimpressed by our presence. Her gaze is almost confrontational, as if daring us to judge her, because she clearly could care less about what we think. Victorine wears her signature black ribbon, but here it is adorned with a large pearl, a symbol typically associated with Venus. And yet she also has a number of details identifying her as a prostitute, which viewers at the time would have been familiar with. The orchid in her hair, her bracelet, and the shawl she lies upon all point to Olympia being a sex worker. Her black cat, who arches its back at us, signifies creatures of the night and a dangerous beauty. And in fact, Manet tells us with the title of the painting, as Olympia was a common name for prostitutes.
She is at once a mythological deity
and a woman of the streets. And most of all, she is Victorine. The figure of Olympia shares the canvas with her maid, who carries her flowers presumably from a client. The two seem to share a camaraderie, that her maid is also her friend, and perhaps partners in crime. While I will share the story of Lore, the model posed as Olympia's maid, later in this episode, it does beg the question, could Victorine and Lore have been friends in real life, too? Though Olympia was painted in 1863, Manet waited until 1865 to exhibit it, likely to let the dust settle after the uproar caused by Le Déjeuner sur l'Herbe. This time, Olympia was accepted into the salon. It caused such chaos that the salon placed two guards in front of the painting to protect it from violent attacks, and eventually the police had to cordon off the painting. Manet even fled to Spain until the mayhem died down. It was, of course, the figure of Olympia that sparked the strongest reactions. Not only was Olympia's profession as a prostitute shocking for viewers, she was modeled by a woman whose identity they were familiar with. Both Manet and Victorine became notorious after Olympia, and for better or for worse, Victorine was a woman to be known. Victorine, in both Le Déjeuner sur l'Herbe and Olympia, changed how we have come to appreciate the female nude. Before Victorine, female nudes were rendered with idealized bodies and an unattainable perfection. Victorine had the bravery to expose herself in her natural state, flaunting her flaws with confidence. Her body received a lot of criticism from her contemporaries, and it must have taken an immense amount of resilience and tenacity to withstand their harsh judgments. But Victorine was ahead of her time, ignoring the public's condemnation and instead owning her sexuality, carving the way for female nudes to come. In the years following Olympia, Victorine continued to model for Manet. We can find her in Manet's work titled Young Lady in 1866, posed as a courtesan with a parrot at her side, as well as the guitar player, playing guitar to another parrot. Again, we are faced with the convergence of performance and self, as Victorine poses as an upper-class courtesan and matured guitar player, we get the same sense of maturity and rise in social class that we can assume Victorine herself had achieved. But how did Victorine live after her success as Manet's model? Manet's studio notebook indicates that she lived in a neighborhood populated with middle-class workers. Victorine likely had other forms of employment outside of modeling for Manet. But unlike the women she posed for, there is no evidence to indicate that Victorine herself was ever a sex worker. Instead, it's believed that Victorine taught music for additional income, providing lessons in both guitar and violin. She may have also performed at cafe concerts. We also know that Victorine did not depend solely on Manet for modeling gigs. She also modeled for Manet's friend, the Belgian-born painter Alfred Stevens. Victorine was most likely introduced to Stevens through Manet. We're not sure of the exact nature of Victorine's relationship with Stevens, many suggesting that they were intimately involved. Whether romantic or not, Victorine was evidently very close to Stevens and sat for him on a number of occasions. There is also the strong possibility that Victorine modeled for the famed artist Degas. She is most likely the model in Degas' Femme sur une terrasse, in which a red-headed beauty is flanked by two flamingos. In the late 1860s, Victorine took a few years' break from modeling for Manet, but we do not have a ton of information from this period, and Victorine's whereabouts are largely up to speculation. it's likely Victorine continued to perform and teach music. And there is some indication that Victorine may have also taken to the stage as an actress, performing small parts at the theater, as there are surviving records of a Victorine performing at a theater that Manet had connections to during this time. But one of the most fascinating details of Victorine's life is that Victorine also traveled to America during this time. This trip is referenced in the one surviving letter we have from Victorine. Beyond knowing with certainty that she came to America in the early 1870s, we are left with an endless sea of questions. The purposes of this trip remain unknown, as does the length of her stay and where in America she traveled to. Some believe she went to see an art dealer, while others push the narrative that her trip was over a love interest. What was Victorine doing in America? Was she there to try to sell some of her paintings? Had she taken a leap of faith and enjoyed a love affair overseas? Who was her lover? Where did she go? With whom did she stay? And how long was she there? Did she like America? Did America like her? The answers to these questions remain some of the many details of Victorine's life that have been lost to history. But the mystery of it makes it all the more enthralling. Her journey to America reveals Victorine's free spirit and the fearlessness it took for her to travel to a faraway country on her own. Whatever the reasons for this trip, Victorine came back a changed woman. A change that her peers began to notice. A change that said, "I'm ready to be my own artist." Before the beginnings of Victorine's career as an artist, she did model for one last painting by Manet upon her return from America. The final work is titled The Railway. Victorine is pictured outside of the famous train station, Gare Saint-Lazare, sitting next to a young girl who looks out at the train smoke. The young girl was modeled by the daughter of the painter Alphonse Hirsch, and the work was painted in Hirsch's garden. Victorine is posed as either the governess or the mother of this young girl, and she is dressed in the clothing of a middle-class bourgeoisie woman, which is likely the class Victorine had entered at that time. While this little girl looks out at the world with excitement, Victorine stares at us pensively with a newfound maturity. She is once again the connecting force between viewer and painting, and it is through her eyes that the painting becomes alive. For the first time as Manet's model, in this final work, Victorine lets her hair down, literally and figuratively. Her time had come to take the paintbrush in her own hands. The work was exhibited at the Salon of 1873. The next time Victorine's image would appear at the Salon, she would be the artist behind the work. Victorine showed great ambition in becoming her own painter. She transformed her apartment into an artist's studio, and she could be seen at the famous Impressionist hotspot, Café Nouvelle Athènes, smoking a cigar in the company of Manet, Monet, Renoir, Degas, and many more legends. One of three female artists allowed to run in their circle. By 1875, she became the student of the portraitist Étienne Leroy, and she took classes at the prestigious Académie Julienne, where she studied both painting and drawing. Alfred Stevens, who we know Victorine was close to, was operating his own school of art attended by women at the time, and it's likely that Victorine also studied there. By 1876, it was finally Victorine's time to shine. A self-portrait by her was accepted into the Salon of that year, the same year that both of Manet's submissions were rejected. In this self-portrait, Victorine gives us a sidelong gaze, staring at us from over her shoulder. Her serious expression reflects the same seriousness with which she was pursuing her career as an artist. She has the matured face of a woman now in her 30s. She is garbed in an elegant yellow gown and wears a rosy lipstick on her lips. Like Olympia, Victorine wears a flower in her hair. But this time, it is not the flower of a sex worker, but of a regal woman. It is no coincidence that her first work to be exhibited publicly, alongside the biggest artist of her day, was a self-portrait. It was a deliberately defiant act, announcing her arrival to the art scene. It shows us how Victorine saw herself and how she wanted to be represented, compared to the numerous paintings of Victorine by her male contemporaries. Here, she plays no part, but presents to us her full candid self. Victorine exhibited another painting of hers at the Salon of 1879. Her painting was hung in the same room as Manet's entry. It is quite remarkable that Victorine exhibited her work at the Salon, let alone on more than one occasion. In Victorine's time, the only way to make it as an artist was to be admitted into the Salon's annual exhibition. And in order to get admitted, most artists had to attend the Académie Beaux-Arts, which women weren't allowed to attend. It was geared to male artists of the upper class who could afford to attend the Academy. And yet Victorine, a woman of lower class origins, exhibited her work at the Salon several times. This speaks to Victorine's immense talent as a painter to overcome these odds. The same year that Victorine exhibited her second work at the Salon, she seemed to have had a falling out with Manet. Victorine began to avoid the impressionist crew that she had once shared cigars with and became a frequent topic of their gossip. Once arguably the greatest artist-slash-model duo of their time, we do not know why Victorine and Manet's relationship deteriorated. Some have theorized that it was over one of Victorine's love affairs. Others that Manet could not bear that Victorine was so successful, or that he was against Victorine's tendency to paint in a more traditional academic style. Why did Victorine break away from Manet? Was it Victorine or Manet who pulled away first? How did Victorine feel about her estrangement from the man she partnered with to create the works that birthed modern art? Another possible reason behind Victorine and Manet's severance is that by 1876, Manet's health began to decline. As a late side effect of untreated syphilis, Manet began to develop a degenerative disease. By 1880, Manet struggled to even walk. He passed away from these complications in 1883, at the age of 51. Did Victorine mourn the artist who helped launch her career as one of the greatest art models to ever exist? The man whose work she had collaborated on that caused such a scene that even Napoleon was appalled? The man who painted her into some of the most iconic works of the 19th century? Did she have any regrets? The only surviving letter we have written by Victorine is a letter she wrote to Manet's wife shortly after his death. Written on July 31, 1883, Victorine, after extending her condolences, hoped Manet's wife would honor a financial agreement that Manet had once promised her. As Victorine wrote, "You know without doubt that I posed for a great many of his paintings, notably Olympia, his masterpiece. Manet took a lot of interest in me, and often said if he sold his paintings, he would reserve some reward for me. I was so young then and careless. I left for America. I refused, enthusiastically thanking him, adding that when I could no longer pose, I would remind him of this promise. That time has come sooner than I thought. The last time I saw Monsieur Manet, he promised to help me get a job in the theater as an usher, adding that he would give me money to secure it. You know the rest and what a rapid sickness ravished your loved one.
Certainly, I had decided never to bother you and remind you of that promise. But misfortune has befallen me. I can no longer model. I have to all alone take care of my old mother, who is now utterly incapable of work. And on top of all this, I had an accident and injured my right hand, a broken finger, and will not be able to do work of any kind for several months. It is in this desperate situation, Madame, which prompts me to remind you of Monsieur Manet's kind promise. If in my misfortune and in remembrance of him, you will be so kind as to interest yourself in my destiny and can do something for me, please accept, Madame, my deepest gratitude. There is no evidence that Manet's wife ever responded to Victorine, a request likely left unanswered. The letter does, however, give us some insight into both Victorine and Manet's relationship, as well as the situation in Victorine's personal life around this time. Manet clearly cared for Victorine and wished to remunerate her for her role in his works, which both Manet and Victorine evidently took seriously. We also know from Victorine's letter that she had fallen on hard times, that she broke her finger and assumably could not paint, and that she was responsible for the care of her ill mother. It's of utmost importance that we hear Victorine's side of her own story, as this period of her life has been exaggerated and misremembered by urban legend. Contributing to this misinformation are works by Norbert Gonuet and Toulouse-Lautrec that feature Victorine from this period. While living in northern France to take care of her mother, Victorine modeled for Gonuet, who actually lived in the same building as Victorine. Gonuet specialized in paintings of the poor. In his Olympe de Choux, we see a middle-aged Victorine seated at a table with her guitar, pet monkey, and a bottle of liquor. She poses as a failed musician, who turns to alcohol to assuage her dismay. In the early 1890s, Toulouse-Lautrec also discovered Victorine and had her model for him on a few occasions. Upon returning to Paris, Victorine lived only a block or two from Lautrec's studio. In his At the Café La Mie, we see an aged Victorine who has a sickly appearance, accentuated by the green hue of her skin. We no longer see Victorine's infamous direct stare, but instead she stares vacantly into space. The work has a depressing air, and Victorine looks both physically and mentally unwell. While we know that Victorine had fallen on hard times, it is dangerous to read these paintings too literally. Gonuet and Lautrec's depictions of Victorine lended to the misconception that Victorine herself had become an alcoholic. Rumors began to spread that Victorine was back on the streets, working as a prostitute and stumbling from bar to bar. Manet's early biographer Tabarot is also much to blame, who reported that Victorine descended into poverty, desperation, and alcoholism. He claimed that Victorine would drunkenly try selling her drawings to the other nightwalkers of Paris's slums, and that she slunk away into oblivion, shortly after dying, impoverished and humiliated. And this is how Victorine has been written off for much of history. Until recently, most accounts of her life have upheld this narrative. But the reality of Victorine's late life was radically different, and primary sources completely contradict these ill-informed narratives. Despite her strained financial position, Victorine continued to paint. In 1885, she returned to Paris from northern France when one of her paintings titled Palm Sunday was accepted into that year's Salon, her third work to date to be included in the prestigious annual exhibition. While we do not know her mother's condition, by 1887 it must have become impossible for Victorine to care for her mother on her own, and she made the wise decision to place her in the care of a well-known hospice center. A few years later, Victorine was once again showing her art. In 1903, she was admitted into the Society of French Artists, which required the sponsorship of at least two current members. One of the members backing Victorine was the Society's own founder,
The following year, she was accepted for the fourth time into the Salon, exhibiting a drawing of a cat and a wasp. She would have been alive when in 1906, both Le Déjeuner sur l'Herbe and Olympia were finally on public view, which we can only imagine was an immense moment of pride. In 1909, there is a record that Victorine received emergency aid from the Society of French Artists, which they would have only rewarded if she maintained good standing. According to census records, Victorine continued to refer to herself as an artist into her late 70s. Though she never got the recognition she deserved, Victorine considered herself an artist until the end. One of the few things Tabarot may have gotten right in his descriptions of Victorine is that Victorine had joined a lesbian sisterhood and was in a relationship with a woman. It actually is likely that Victorine was part of this lesbian subculture, and that she herself was in relationships with women, at least in the latter half of her life. Victorine never married. We know that by 1906, Victorine moved to a suburb of Paris and lived out the last two decades of her life with a woman named Mary Dufour, whom we can assume was her partner. This is one of the many fascinating details of Victorine's life that are testament to her brave and independent spirit, as same-sex partnerships were not well received in 19th-century France. And as we see Victorine posed as the modern sexual woman in Manet's most famous works, it should be noted that she was also likely a queer woman, representing modern sexuality in ways only Victorine may have been aware of at the time. Victorine passed away on March 17, 1927, at the age of 83. Though rumors claim she died a decrepit alcoholic in the 1880s, Victorine actually lived another 40 years. In the words of art historian Eunice Lipton, Victorine, quote, was a real woman who lived to an old age, through the end of the century, a world war, and the 1920s, and who, despite the circulation of gossip, continued to live a fruitful life outside of established scenarios, on the very edge of what was possible. A woman who wanted, among other things, to be a painter, and who seems to have succeeded. It was only recently that scholars have begun to re-examine Victorine as her own painter, and correct the centuries of misinformation that drowned Victorine's legacy for far too long. Though it was believed that all of her works had been lost, in 2004, her painting Palm Sunday resurfaced and sold to a private collector. Her self-portrait was thereafter discovered and is currently part of the Museum of Fine Art in Boston's collection, along with Manet's early portrait of Victorine and the street singer. Today, we put an end to the dismissal of Victorine's important legacy. The next time you see Manet's Olympia, remember that it was not just Manet's artistry, but Victorine's presence as the sitter that created the works that would forever change the history of art. And that Victorine herself was an established artist who exhibited her works at the Salon on numerous occasions and was a member of the Society of French Artists. That she traveled to America on her own as a single woman and explored another part of the world. That she was more than likely a queer woman who lived out the last 20 years of her life with her female partner in a time when that was almost unheard of. Victorine redefined, not just for Manet, but for us as well, our very understanding of a modern woman. Confident in her body, defying all obstacles her gender and class presented and becoming a successful female artist, and loving fearlessly whomever she desired. I will now share the story of Laure, the woman posed as Manet's maid and comrade, and whose presence is essential to our appreciation of Manet's masterpiece. Laure has inexcusably been snubbed, either seen as meaningless or oversimplified as a racial stereotype, whose role is only to accentuate the figure of Olympia. In today's episode, we will give Laure the recognition she deserves and explore the ways in which Laure's inclusion in Olympia was an important contributing factor to the painting's modernity. Manet not only modernized the figure of Laure by bringing her to the forefront of the canvas and giving her equal space as her white counterpart, she was also signifying an under-discussed reality of modern Paris. The emergence of a free Black population just 15 years after the abolition of territorial slavery. Laure's presence is almost documentarian and can be seen as an early rendering of the cultural hybridity materializing in 19th century Paris. Manet painted Laure on three different occasions, all within 12 months of each other. These works not only show Manet's developing relationship with Laure, but also his increasing awareness of this growing Black presence. It was in Manet's neighborhood in northern Paris that the majority of Paris's Black community lived and worked. There began to be a cohabiting and commingling of this Black population with artists, migrant workers, and even the bourgeoisie. This northern part of Paris became a safe haven for Black persons to live and work freely. And many notable Black artists like Langston Hughes and Josephine Baker journeyed over to enjoy a freedom not existent in America. Laure herself lived in this area, less than a 10-minute walk from Manet's studio. There were a variety of positions that Black women of Laure's time filled. Maids, nannies, and street vendors among some. But here we have Laure, working as a professional artist's model, challenging our conception of what was possible for a Black woman of her time. So who was Laure, and how did she find her way to Manet's studio to model for one of the most revolutionary works of art to ever be made? Unfortunately, most of Laure's story has been lost to history. We do not know her last name, who her parents were, or where she was born. In Manet's notebook, which is the only written document we have on Laure, he notes her first name, her address, and a short description of une très belle négresse, translating as a very beautiful Black woman. It is most likely that Laure was of Caribbean descent, from the French West Indies, as her head wrap she is pictured in all three of Manet's paintings references the Caribbean. We know that she lived on the third floor of her building, which was the working class domain, above the fancier first and second floor apartments. The neighborhood in which Laure dwelled housed one of the most concentrated Black populations and was richly diverse. It was also the neighborhood that all the Impressionists lived in, and Laure would have walked the same streets as Manet, Degas, and Renoir. We have no surviving records concerning how Laure and Manet met. Did he notice her working as a maid or nurse in Paris and approach her? Were they introduced? The most plausible possibility is that Manet met Laure through Jean Duval, a Haitian-born artist who was romantically involved with Manet's close friend, the poet Charles Baudelaire. Might Jean and Laure have been friends? Would Jean have invited Laure into her artistic circles? The answers to these questions defer to our imagination. Apart from Manet's note, the closest we come to understanding Laure is by examining the work she is pictured in. The first painting we find Laure in is Manet's Children in the Tuileries, made in 1862. Manet took a daily stroll through the Tuileries gardens as he walked from his studio to the Louvre for drawing classes. In this work, he paints a scene we can imagine he came across regularly. Children wandering through the gardens under the watch of their nannies. What makes this work all the more interesting is that Manet includes a Black nanny. And this is where we find Laure, to the very right of the canvas, attentively watching one of the children. She wears a light pink collared dress, in fact, the exact same dress she later wears in Olympia, and a headscarf reminiscent of a madras wrap, a traditional Caribbean head wrap. This is the first of Manet's works of Laure in which Laure's inclusion and rendering modernizes the painting. Previous depictions of black nannies carried a suspicious air and were riddled with racial stereotypes. Here, we simply see a scene from the everyday, where someone like Lore was an increasing normalized part of that world. She is not a caricature, but rather a real Parisian woman. The painting is our first indication that Manet was beginning to become aware of working-class black women as part of a new reality. Lore's presence tells us that black women were employed as nannies in Paris as early as the 1860s. And her attire, a combination of European and Caribbean influences, also lends to our understanding of how black women were assimilating into French culture, while still honoring the traditions of which they came. We have our most intimate moment with Lore in Manet's Portrait of Lore, made the following year. Lore is pictured in a white dress that falls off her shoulders. She wears a necklace and pair of earrings, which accentuate the glisten of her eyes. She also wears a colorfully patterned headscarf, which we can assume was styled by Lore herself. And we see more closely Lore's melding of cultural identities through her attire. Manet's Portrait of Lore is quite revolutionary in that it differs greatly from the eroticized and exoticized portraits of black women standard of the period. In these works, black women were fetishized, depicted bare-breasted with their curves accentuated and dressed in exotic attire that heightened their sexuality and foreignness. In contrast, Lore's beauty is completely dissociated from her sexual attributes, and her portrait is in no way sexualized. Lore is not exotic, but a culturally hybrid individual navigating an evolving modern world. For centuries, Lore's portrait was written off as a study for Olympia, one of the many slights that is only recently being challenged. Painted around the same time as Manet's early portrait of Victorine, we see a similar attention to Lore's individual features and personality. While Victorine gives us a serious stare, Lore smiles warmly, and we feel a softness and sweetness that speaks to her lighthearted demeanor. She is at once both empathetic and dignified, and as our eyes meet Lore's, we cannot help but smile back. The last and most famous work that Lore modeled for is, of course, Olympia, painted just a few months after her portrait. In the simplest sense, Olympia is a portrait of two women, one black and one white. And here Manet paints two of his favorite models, Victorine and Lore, into a performative piece about modern Paris. They each play parts, Victorine the unforgiving prostitute and Lore the black maid, who was part of the changing racial composition of Paris. They are two women working in the sex trade of their own free will, far from victims and instead empowered in their choice. And there is a sense of camaraderie between the two women. As scholar Denise Murrell imagined, Lore, quote, seems to be a friend of the prostitute, maybe even advising her. Look, think twice before you turn that man away. Take these flowers, girl, you gotta get paid. Were Lore and Victorine comrades in real life? What did they talk about as they sat for Manet's painting together? Did they continue a relationship outside of the studio? It's exhilarating to imagine Victorine and Lore sharing space. Two empowered women, unafraid to push against societal limitations, and together creating one of the most revolutionary works ever to be made. Manet's rendering of Lore broke tradition in a number of ways. In Titian's Venus of Urbino, the black maid is tucked into the background and almost blends into the background. Here, Manet brings Lore to the forefront of the canvas, and she is an active part of the scene. Again, Manet does not render Lore in a sexualized way, even into a scene set at a brothel. Nor is she exotic, but is just as much a part of the everyday as Olympia. By including Lore, Manet was capturing an important aspect of the modern day, the assimilation of free Black communities just 15 years after the end of slavery, the rendering of Lore as a member of the working class and as a culturally hybrid woman is a huge contributing factor of what makes Olympia a modernized work. Olympia was the first painting ever to be hung at the Salon in which a Black woman was not represented as a foreigner, but rather a working-class French woman. In all three of the works in which Lore is pictured, we see Manet's desire to give marginalized individuals the artistic attention they deserve, providing visibility to the Parisians who had been overlooked for far too long. And what's more fascinating is that Lore is also believed to be the model for Le Bassier Enfantin by Jacques-Eugène Fayen. Here again we find Lore posed as a nanny, wearing a similar headscarf and gracing us with her warm smile. The painting was exhibited at the Salon of 1865, alongside Olympia. It's remarkable that not one, but two separate works featuring Lore would have been on view, among the best works of that year. This also attests to Lore being an artist model more generally, not limited to Manet. She was a working model posing for numerous different artists. In the last few years, Lore has begun to attract the attention she deserves. She has inspired works by contemporary artists Michelaine Thomas and Romare Bearden. An exhibition at the Musée d'Orsay titled Posing Modernity, the Black Model for Manet to Matisse to Today, featured the works in which we find Lore, curated by the leading scholar on Lore, Denise Murrell. But we have only scratched the surface of uncovering Lore's important legacy. We still have so much more to learn of Lore's life, and we can only hope that more information will surface as she is further studied. So the next time you look at Manet's Olympia, think not only of Victorine, but also of Lore, a working-class free Black woman navigating a new Paris just 15 years after slavery was abolished. The first Black woman to be represented at the Paris Salon as a modern woman, not an eroticized foreigner. A woman who impressed Manet so much that he took special note of her in his studio book. And a woman whom we cannot wait to get to know more. I hope you have enjoyed this episode on Victorine Morant and Lore. I have included images, resources, and suggestions for further reading on the Art Muse website and Instagram. Art Muse is produced by Kula Production Company. Today's episode was written by me, your host, Grace Anna. Stay tuned as I continue to share the stories of the women behind some of the world's most important works of art. Until next time, bye for now.